Hi, everybody, and welcome back to a day of brand new bite-sized podcasts. Hope you'll enjoy these. This is a particularly interesting one because it relates to a story that was much in the news in the past day or so. So we're going to get into the whole issue of the IVF industry. But before we do that, just a word of thanks to my sponsors at quantumhypno.co.uk. Do check out their site, link below. And do support Sarah if you can. And let's turn our attention then to this story. I mean, I've come up with a title here with a distinctly unusual title, but then many of mine are, to be fair. But as I will reveal, it has great relevance to a story that's been given vast publicity over the past few weeks. We're going to get to Gordon Brown later on, but for now, I want to draw your attention to this headline from Size, the Daily Mail. Lesbian couple who gave birth to each other's sons talk about the process. Yeah, I know. The story reads, Emily Patrick, 38-year-old, a creative producer, and Kerry Osborne, 35-year-old, a school teacher from Gosport, Hampshire, had two sons named Elvis and Ezra, who were born to the couple via IVF. It's the first time the procedure known as simultaneous reciprocal IVF has been attempted in the UK. It's so sordid, this. Elvis was created from Kerry's egg, which was then fertilized and implanted in Emily's womb. And Ezra was created from Emily's egg and implanted in Kerry. You get the picture of what has happened here just from that description. I mean, I'm reading this and I can't even believe that this is what they are reporting, but that's the truth. That's what the Daily Mail says. But as always with these fertility stories, it's the questions that are missing from the story that are the most revealing. Insofar as readers are made aware, there is no medical basis for any of this. The swapping of wombs seems to be solely to do with the feelings of bonding to the other person's child. That is not a medical argument for intervention. No way is that a medical argument for intervention. As regular listeners will know, fertility experts who I regularly quote, such as Professor Robert Winston, are profoundly worried about the use of IVF as a lifestyle treatment. And he's right, and so am I. In this story, there appear to be a number of simpler and safer options that were not used. The women could have used a turkey baster at home. The women could have used intrauterine insemination. IUI involves inserting a sperm sample that has been washed in a transport solution to promote sperm swimming speed directly into the womb. This is done on the precise day of the month that an egg has been released. Compared with IVF, IUI is much cheaper and much safer in terms of cutting long-term risks. So there's a lot of unanswered questions attached to this story. How is it that this pair ended up using IVF? Who precisely is generating all of the publicity surrounding this couple? Was any of this publicity requested by PR people connected to the fertility industry? I wonder. The reason why I ask this question is because for something so incredibly private to be publicized on this massive scale usually involves the involvement of PR spivs. You know, stories just don't happen to end up in the press. It doesn't work like that. As well as the unusually large amount of publicity that this pair attracted, I also wanted to ask whether they have been paid in cash or in kind for any of this publicity. The story tells us that the procedure cost $25,000. Okay, who paid the $25,000? Did they pay for it themselves? Was there a discount in return for publicizing their story? I also want to know why, in all the column inches of publicity attached to this story, there's no mention of the statistical odds of the two women carrying a child to full term at the same time using IVF. Because you see, IVF has very poor success rates. But these two people have managed to carry each other's egg at the same time and go to the full term. I mean, talk about beating the odds. I flagged this up on previous podcasts, you might remember, a couple of very risky techniques that can raise the chance of long-term pregnancy, yes, but, and this is the kicker, at the cost of raising the long-term risks to the children. This is the point. It's the children we have to think about, not these narcissists wanting to essentially go against nature. Here's a quick reminder of what I said. Quote, Robert Winston says that embryos can be left to mature for up to 5 days in the laboratory to maximize the chance of implantation in the mother's womb. But he warned, it may have a deleterious effect on genes. It does in mouse models. It's also possible that drugs used to stimulate a woman's ovaries to produce eggs can cause chromosomal abnormalities in offspring. I mean, that's pretty worrying, isn't it? Here's another headline. IVF clinics, quote, IVF clinics are embezzling millions of pounds from patients by selling needle add-on treatments, a leading expert has warned. This is such all such a scam, my friends. The story reads, Professor Chris Barrett of Dundee University says about half of couples are being offered something called ICSI, which stands for, believe it or not, intracytoplasmic sperm injection. It's really catchy. ICSI is supposed to be for men with poor swimming sperm. A single sperm is injected directly into the egg, and according to the Telegraph, Professor Bernard told the Progress Educational Trust's annual conference in London, the question is, why do you have a large number of people having ICSI who don't have male factor infertility? What's happening? The only conclusion logically you can come to is that it's, da-da, financially driven. That might not be true, but it's the only logical conclusion. Now, all of that detail, that pesky detail, is missing from the story of Emily and Kerry. What was the method used in the laboratory? Was the sperm injected using high-risk ICSI? And did the embryos spend more than 48 hours in the incubator to try to raise the chance of full-term pregnancies? There's one other part of the story that is worth talking about as well. And this is where we get to England and to Gordon Brown. Yes, I hadn't forgotten. It was Gordon Brown's government that put into law the Human Fertilisation and Embryology Act 2008. This is the headline from the Guardian newspaper in 2009. Quote, lesbian partners to be named on birth certificates. Then the story goes on to say, lesbian couples having children through fertility treatment are granted the same birth certificate rights as heterosexual couples. Oh yes, my friends. Let me just explain this a bit. If you want to know some background, gay rights activists lobbied to have the law changed in England and Wales so that same-sex couples were automatically both the parents on the birth certificate if they used a home insemination. That would also apply, by the way, to a straight married couple, so that the man, even if he had not used his own sperm, is named on the birth certificate. The law itself would have been drafted long before it was passed in 2008, before the internet was truly popular. The internet changed that. And the effect of this is that the law has backfired on the powers that be. Arch globalist Gordon Brown has, de facto, shot his own team in the foot. Some people hold the opinion that the fertility industry in England and Wales is spitting feathers about this law for the following reason. If you are a lesbian woman and you ask yourself, why does this law exist? And you come up with the answer, what? To lower the risk of birth defects? What would you do upon learning that? Well, if you're smart, you'd work your way from there as to how to stay out of a clinic. The law puts everyone alert about the dangers of clinics, and it would have lain hidden in obscurity were it not for the old internet. Very few people would ever have known about it. So what you have here is a glitch in the matrix. This law cannot be overwritten or revoked without drawing attention to its existence. The powers that be are sort of stuck with the law on the statute book in England and Wales. If you listen to people like my good friend Jem O'Doherty, John Waters, this is what they argue. They will argue a gay person may think the government cares about them. A woman who wants an abortion may think the government cares about them, but people like Gemma and John say, no, you're simply being co-opted by the government, either to sterility or to end up paying the powers that be to have a baby. Gemma and John argue that the reason why politicians became so interested in gay issues is because they could use the issue to drop the birth rate. Hello, depopulation. If these politicians who proclaim their devotion to all things LGBT are genuine, then what you would expect is that this law would be copied in other countries. If Scottish politicians are so LGBT friendly, why is this law not enacted in Scotland? Why is this law not enacted in Northern Ireland? Most laws drawn up to supposedly to help LGBT people are harmonised across whole regions. So you might expect this law to be harmonised across the EU, for example. But of course, it's never going to happen. The powers that be will never let such a law establish itself in any country ever again. And this law, therefore, has thrown a huge spanner in the works in the UK for the fertility industry. Home insemination costs the fertility industry millions of pounds in lost revenue. So once you know this law exists, you just model yourself around it. Which brings me back, as I just finish off here, to Emily and Kerry, Elvis and Elvira. If lesbians living in England and Wales are collectively cottoning on to the absence of any need to use hugely expensive, hugely risky IVF, what argument is there for lesbians to use IVF at all? In the absence of any medical argument, I suppose another argument could be constructed that IVF could help people bond with their children. And who would create this narrative in the public consciousness? Well, ever so conveniently, along comes Emily and Kerry. What we have here is a lesbian couple with no medical argument for using IVF who are paraded all over the mainstream media, arguing instead that IVF womb swapping helps bonding with the child. I'll end this podcast, as I often do, with a little catchphrase coined by Mr. John Lydon, formerly of the Sex Pistols. Quote, ever get the feeling you've been cheated?